Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here as per usual with Josh Ulswich. Hey, Josh.
Hey, as per usual is my line, okay? That's how my videos. You can't steal that.
My bad. I adopted it. How you doing?
Good, man. Stuff's really popping off here for the irresponsible community members around
us. Irresponsible crypto degenerates that are out there. You know, I was tweeting yesterday about how I feel like there are some weeks where it's like nothing happens and you and I just kind of talk about some range that Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever. And then there's some weeks when so much crap happens, I have no idea how we'll even cover it. This is one of those weeks where I feel like we've just had a constant stream of crap going on. And it's been wild. It's been fun. I'm having a good time. Hey, by the way, we're streaming this on Twitch for any of our podcast listeners that want to check it out. You can come look at it on Twitch. My buddy Nick Kaur just said he could see every eyebrow on my face, so I had to put myself immediately into picture-in-picture. and so, Josh, obviously people are hyped because crypto's pumping kind of across the board. We've got Bitcoin, Bitcoin's ranging, but bullish. And then Ethereum broke out of a multi-day consolidation last night. On top of that, there's just been so much stuff, so much news between, I mean, what have we had going on here? Like this DeFi mayhem, absolute FOMO in the DeFi landscape, Uniswap stuff, which is like degenerate DEX trading, Ethereum fees through the roof. What's your take on the last few days?
Well, any catastrophic fee problem is always bullish. It's obviously terrible for the people who have to live through it, but it just means that people are using the chain, right? So ETH might not be able to scale. Like, look at CryptoKitties. This is like CryptoKitties cubed, right? Like, this is this is a whole new level of insane on-chain demand because of Uniswap specifically.
Yeah, so Uniswap is it's a DEX type of thing. This is literally all it is for anybody that's on the stream side of things, where the primary place you can go is, you know, you just put in, you connect a wallet, and you spend one ETH or whatever, and you get X amount of some other token, and there's this liquidity pool on the back end, which fuels an automated market maker instead of having a traditional order book. So in some ways it's really complicated, and in some ways it's much simpler than, you know, traditional trading. But, you know, people are seemingly getting by figuring out how to do things. But
it's non-custodial, right?
Yeah, it's non-custodial. So you can just hook up your MetaMask, and your MetaMask can be hooked up to whatever, a hardware wallet, software wallet, whatever. And then you just you send your Ethereum back and forth with these coins, and people are connecting to some of the DeFi stuff for, you know, farming and getting yield. They're doing it to do the same thing you would have normally, but on any other exchange. But, you know, on Uniswap, they're doing all kinds of stuff, and yeah, it's interesting.
Well, I think the biggest reason Uniswap is popping off is because it's listing stuff quicker than Binance can, quicker than Coinbase, right? It's like,
yeah, because there is no real listing. It's just a user puts it on there. And
right.
And
there's no KYC, right?
There's no KYC.
So this is just regulatory arbitrage.
Yeah.
All over again.
In many ways, that's exactly what it is. My dog's barking. I guess the mail's coming. I might let you take over for a second. But one of the interesting things, I think, is if Ethereum fees weren't so high, I mean, it shows you, like, here's the price impact you'll have, here's the fee that you're going to pay. All that stuff is pretty straightforward. But have you used this yet? Can you talk about that for a second while I get my dog to shut up?
Yeah. No, I haven't used Uniswap specifically, but I've used on-chain stuff. I mean, ZRX was kind of one of the early ones as well. The token set stuff is similar.
Yeah, and I think they're kind of scrambling to try to be competitive now, because Uniswap, which interestingly doesn't have a token, it just was unleashed on the world, and like you said, there's no one really in control, and it takes out a lot of those things when there's a team behind it with a coin or, you know, control and all that kind of stuff. So the app interface, uniswap.org, is controlled by someone, but the protocol is not. So I think you can just interface with the Uniswap protocol on the Ethereum main chain. There's nothing anybody can do to stop it, do anything different or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you realize, not you specifically, but everybody realizes that anything you invest, trade on Uniswap could be gone in literally the next hour, then, you know, I don't have a problem with it, right? Like, if you practice safe trading
and
you realize that this stuff can literally evaporate in front of your eyes.
Yeah, the liquidity can be pretty bad. Right now, you know, if I go on this Uniswap interface and some random token, it says, hey, you get 0.5% slippage if you buy 10 Ethereum worth of this thing. Well, when it's melting and you try to go in the reverse direction, you try to sell 100% of that, and it might cause like 10% slippage. So you're losing 10% because you are making the trade. And the other element of this, I don't have a wallet connected on this computer, but the transaction fees are, you know, you could pay $100 for one of these swaps. So it's extraordinarily expensive to do. Do you have the Ethereum network stuff in a tab?
Yeah, I can look it up. But the fees, it's like everything else. Like, no one cares about the network fees right now because they're making more just FOMOing into anything they can, right? And nobody cares about the auditing of smart contracts because they're just FOMOing into everything. Yams, Wi-Fi, you know, it's like there's a new one literally every day when I wake up. Someone
and it's always
Someone's in my messages like, have you heard of Based? I'm like, you gotta be kidding me, right? Like, is this a real thing?
I'll have you know, Based is a clone of Zamp, so I'm a Zamp maximalist. But yeah, Arthur Hayes is tweeting about Yams and Based and crap.
Arthur's been a great contraindicator.
Oh man.
As long as time has been.
It was within like 2 hours that Yams had a irrevocable bug and went to crap. You just mentioned one that I was going to look up, but another thing, the tools for this thing, these things, they're both awesome and terrible. Like, you can use this DEX tools thing. Now you have to hold 5,000 DEX, which is, I think it's thousands of dollars worth of this dumb coin, in order to use the full suite of tools on their website. But it shows you an actual log of like which wallets are buying, a live log of the purchases coming in. You can look at some 1 minute chart or whatever. So you'd start to develop this workflow, you know, between using something like DEX tools, using uniswap.info, and, you know, you can look up the coin, like if you're looking for different contracts, and you search for something like YAM or whatever, and it's just like, you got to filter and find out what's what. And then there's this total liquidity that's in there on Uniswap, which, it's basically going to give you an idea for the amount of depth that you can expect for how much you can order and things. But it is the Wild West. Like, YAM is supposed to be a token that you get as yield because you were staking with something else. Like, you were participating on a network, and then you're essentially rewarded with your yield of YAMs. And it's not really supposed to be something that you go buy or sell on the open market like you would another item. And Yams was funny because it had this rebase mechanism, which is what a lot of these do, where they're supposed to trend towards a specific price. And it was trading way, way above that. And then they did their rebase and it went to $10, which was normal from 100 to 10, except for it's supposed to be mapping to $1. But then Yams had this bug where their rebase was messed up and they printed so many Yams that they couldn't any longer vote on it because the governance would never have a majority. And then Yams went to like 10 cents or 12 cents or something, which is way below the stable, you know, the reflexive price. It's supposed to be around a dollar. And now they're back up to 51 cents. So people were arbing whether Yams would be saved or not. So I don't know what happens if I just Google save Yam. But this is still looking for something else, but I do get a Google result for saving Yams. But yeah, that code had a huge bug, and anyone that just tried to buy these Yams on the open market lost their like lost 90% of their money if they bought like after the rebase and held until that bug went out. And you just got to be careful, because that smart contract was completely unaudited. Any of these coins is really a smart contract that you're buying into, and that smart contract, you have no idea what's on there. Someone could have complete control. They could take your coins. They could do whatever. They could burn them all. You just have no idea. So there's a lot of trust that you're putting into these unless they're audited and you kind of figure out what's what.
It's legitimately Russian roulette.
It is Russian roulette, but it's kind of glorious in some ways. And it's obviously absurd, but kind of awesome.
I just feel like my edge isn't deciding on which Ponzi is the best Ponzi. My edge is like trading a chart like Bitcoin, ETH, like the top 10. Like, give me the top 10. I'm fine. You know, I don't need to gamble on scratch off lottery tickets on Uniswap, right?
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of the top 10, I mean, everything's been doing pretty well. We haven't even prioritized, Josh, talking about Link, for example. I mean, Link went to $18. $18 plus yesterday, off of a low of $1.45. I looked this up. I bought it the day after the terrible, you know, March stuff. I bought this thing at $1.85 and sold it for like $2.30. You know, who would have guessed? Like, this type of run, we're going to have a retrace, especially of some of these altcoins. But it's kind of incredible what we've seen. It's an exaggeration even of what we've seen in the legacy markets, but certainly the narrative all around is extreme bullishness right now.
Yeah, when we get those major drops like that, I have this weakness where I don't focus on alts. I just look at BTC and ETH for the most part. But yeah, buying Link at those lows, oh man.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to your Ethereum leaderboard here. So this is the activity on the Ethereum network.
Yeah, so everybody's talking about, I mean, obviously if you're using ETH at all, you realize that fees are insane. And Uniswap has actually surpassed Tether over the past 30 days as far as the total fees. It's 6 million. I mean, this Tether's fees alone are insane. And Tether is like 20 to 25%. Of transactions on ETH at any given point in time. I don't know what Uniswap's transactions are, but that'd be super interesting to find out.
The transaction counts?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I think in one 24-hour period, it was like 550 or 600,000. So that 30-day includes a lot of growth, because at that rate, it would do 6 million in like 10 days.
Yeah, I'd have to look at these contracts, so I can click on it.
Yeah, you said nobody cares, but I do think it is. The fees did start to affect the activity on Uniswap, because if you go, say you spend $1,000 and you're spending $100 just to do the one-way transaction, you need to make 20% on that trade before you make anything at all once you do a round trip. So, I mean, they were pretty insane there, and certainly preventing smaller holders from participating as much.
I mean, I had my set fees were $250 yesterday to rebalance. So
yeah,
it's just like, and that's even on the low end. I've seen fees that are in the thousands for people.
Wow. Yeah, there were, and some are based on bugs in these smart contracts and stuff. One of the, I don't even want to mention it, like one of the token raises had a 3 ETH bug on top of the normal transaction, and people were doing it. But that's kind of insane. So this is highlighting the need for Ethereum 2.0, whatever. It's going to be a while before we're there, though. Like, we're not seeing anything like that. Oh, look at that 1-inch exchange. That's basically Uniswap interfacing as well. So it's another 820K. And I'm sure some of these other are too. The Synthetics, IDEX, the Chi token, Kyber. This is all basically DEX trading.
Yeah, and I've actually never seen this many unlabeled addresses on the leaderboard. But what I was going to say is all the DEXs should just be on side chains or something. Like, there needs to be scaling, because the issue that we're encountering is that if this stuff gets popular enough, any amount of scaling isn't enough. It's just not going to be enough, you know?
Yeah, not on the main chain. They need to have a way to operate on a side chain or independently, and then do something where they like settle up wallet balances once a day or something.
Yeah, because this, you know, this isn't going to last long term.
Which I think that's basically how IDEX works in some ways. Like I think that's how theirs was. You run into the problem of control there again, like, and the need to where eventually you'll have to do some kind of KYC for people. So keeping it anti-KYC, essentially, I think it needs to be open on a main chain, you know, like rather than a centralized point of control.
Yeah, security scalability. I mean, when is the SEC going to come down on Uniswap as well? Like,
Uniswap, just people running the app.
The regulatory arb for anything doesn't last forever. Just ask Polo, ask Bittrex, ask any of these exchanges that were listing ICOs. Something else I was thinking about was, you know, for ICOs, you at least had a conference where a bunch of projects got together and shilled their garbage. Whereas these Uniswap things, you could just literally list it. We could list something right now in Uniswap and it would get millions in volume. So it's great for the COVID era because no one has to actually be in the room, right?
Yeah. And speaking of that, one of my friends was talking to me about that concept, and this is partly what it means when you say you got to be careful. You can list something, you know, pump it up early on. There's nothing to stop you from having minted something that then you can go and remint a bunch more. So you could say like, yeah, there's only going to be 100,000 tokens ever, and you know, people hype your token up, and then you mint 100,000 more yourself, and then just dump the entire pool on top of the people that were buying it. So like, unless you know really what you're in, you know, putting money in, or you're willing to take the risk that it completely goes away and the developer, fake developer, whatever, like takes it out from you, then you just need to be careful.
Yeah. I mean, there's an infinite amount of things that could go wrong when you're trading this stuff. It's unaudited, fly by night, all sorts of stuff.
But it's not stopping people. How many millions, hundreds of millions did Yams have in there before that bug?
I thought it was like 150 million at least.
I thought it was even more, but yeah. So let's go with 150 million. And that was people who, it was said it was unaudited. It ended up having a basically fatal flaw. They just were lucky that the fatal flaw didn't allow someone to steal their Ethereum. Instead, the fatal flaw just made it to where they couldn't control the network anymore and it went to crap. But it could have been anything. So you're interfacing with a smart contract. Smart contracts can control wallets. Wallets can take your money. So you got to be careful. But at the same time, it's really fun. And with the risk of that, the opportunity for huge moves on some of those, you know, small cap tokens and stuff are definitely there. Like, you know, people are making 300-400% in 15 minutes.
The opportunity to get rich quickly is right in front of your face.
I'm not trying to
get in. Just get in early enough and you'll be fine.
I'm not trying to say it that way, but yes.
Sell it to the other fool buying the highs.
Yeah. Well, it's that. The other side of this, I would say, though, is, you know, rather than you can't get access to something unless it's OTC until it gets on a big exchange listing, the exchange pumps it right away, or, you know, it just provides access to people that otherwise wouldn't have it. So it's a democratization of these token distributions at an earlier stage of the cycle, so that you're not getting, I don't know, what's one of these VC tokens? Like, you're not getting Atom, like, Comp. Yeah, or Comp after it's like 50x'd and freaking Andreessen Horowitz is dumping all over your face on Coinbase. Yeah, Coinbase. Thank you. And I mean, is this really so much worse than that? You know, like, this gives you access to the same dadgum thing when it's worth $5 or $10 million market cap, not $100 million, and the VCs or whoever else, early investors, are already to their eyeballs in profit.
I don't know. It's not for me. It's just greater fool stuff that is not good for the space long term. ETH, it's a massive long squeeze. I was going to pull up Nexus Mutual. This is the ETH locked in Nexus Mutual. It's at 100K.
What is Nexus Mutual?
Exactly. Thank you. just in the past like month, it's gone up to 100K ETH. So all this stuff, it's a giant long squeeze in smart contracts that are unaudited, unsecure for the most part. Just be careful. You know, this is a DAO hack situation just waiting to happen. Waiting to happen.
Yeah. I mean, the YAM thing could have totally been that. Could have been another DAO situation.
Yeah, I agree. But in the meantime, you know, ETH is going to moon to 7, 8, whatever four-digit number. Like, it's just going to keep going if this ball keeps rolling, right?
Before we get to ETH, I've got this BTC, simple as it gets, weekly chart here. And a lot of this stuff is stemming from the fact that by most measures, we're in a bull market, right? Like, we made a higher high on a weekly time frame and retested it. We're back above it. That's what all this 11.5 stuff is to me. And I don't know where we go necessarily, but this is not a bearish chart. And Bitcoin's gone slower than a lot of these other alts and stuff. So we're seeing alts move in these little 1 week, 2 week time periods while Bitcoin's not. And then Bitcoin's doing a lot of its weekly move in like 12 hours or something, and then alts go again. So that's why we're seeing these altcoins perform so well, but it all relies still on Bitcoin's health, and Bitcoin looks extraordinarily bullish.
Yeah, the stuff will just keep rotating around, definitely.
I mean, Stuhl Presidente bought Bitcoin yesterday.
Yeah, whatever, dude. I can't stand that guy. Anyway, let me just real quick talk about this mempool stuff for ETH, too. I had no idea that it's gotten so bad that transactions are getting kicked out of the mempool for ETH. So if your transaction is sent at a low enough fee or fees go up really quickly and your transaction is just sitting there and hanging, it'll just get kicked back and say, like, you know, you need to resend it at a higher fee. So this is just a chart showing that the number of evictions is above 70K now, I'm sure. But so there's that, which is also insane and very not good for the network. But this is just pushing fees higher, because if you send a transaction that gets evicted, if you need to send it, you're going to send it again at a higher fee. So it's this loop that just keeps going.
Yeah. I had some stuff get clogged up and I didn't know what was going on. I was just an ape pressing buttons.
Because when I
just would jump to a different browser, do it again.
When I look at this pending transaction chart, I'm like, okay, like, it used to be hanging around 60K, then it was 100, now it's 150, but it seems to be stabilizing. But in actuality, this is just transactions getting kicked out of the mempool. I think that's what we're seeing here, like, over time. Like,
yeah,
you know, they're just hanging.
You know who's making bank on all this is Ethereum miners. Like, well,
that's what some of the other guys in the other chats I'm in were saying. Like, if the ETH miners were smart, they would just keep creating all of these DeFi coins over and over again, because it ensures that they make an insane amount of money on fees.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a chart that I'll pull up here too that's kind of representative of gas, but you're showing the gas limits.
I don't really know like the underlying explanation for gas limit. I just think of it as the block size, basically, but even though that's completely incorrect. And I know the miners have to vote. Like, it's a governance thing to like raise the gas limit. And so they've raised it a couple times and it looks like it's right at that, you know, it's at whatever the limit is now, clearly.
Yeah. So one of the ways to do these swaps is through that 1-inch exchange, which may be the worst name ever. But they have this, Chi token, and this is representative of what fees did as well. Because I mean, this thing, it just went nuts. It went from, what, say 40 cents up to a high of 470. So it like 10x'd. And this is essentially representative of the way Ethereum fees work, because what happens is you buy this token and then they have some kind of weird derivative mechanism where it essentially allows you to get 50% off of the normal swap fees. So the token ends up kind of mapping the gas representation. So you can see how much hype there was between the 11th and the 13th. So basically the past 3 days, it just went parabolic, almost guaranteed to have to go down from there and find some kind of new normal. But it did get, it was too much there. Like, people could not even come close to affording transacting on a network like that. So pretty good sign of how crazy it got.
I mean, you're going to see, like, we've seen all this before. Like, if you've been around since 2017, there's going to be some spillway transaction thing where, If there's a chain that can handle the transactions for these DEXs, like if it's like ETH and EOS, for example, you're going to see all of this activity move to EOS. I don't think that's actually technologically possible right now, but that's something to watch for. Just like we saw with BTC and LTC, it's like if BTC is full and clogged, it's just going to move to the next chain, right? It's not, it doesn't care. Like people don't really care if it happens in the background or if they need to buy LTC to get off the exchange because BTC is clogged, whatever.
Yeah, we could start to see, like some of these chain bridges start to become popular where people are like, hey, run this app or whatever, and you can do it on this other chain. And it supports the same code as Ethereum. But like you said, with EOS and some of them, they won't even have that chance. But I think that we'll probably see a move towards some of that type of activity if this continues to be a issue. Or somebody just launches their DeFi thing on a whole different chain and it's the same game, different chain.
Yeah, because at some point it's going to be cheaper to actually have a taxable event, buy another coin, get out of your ERC-20, like buy yeah. LTC, like buy literally anything else, send it to wherever you need to send it, and then rebuy whatever you were trying to send in the first place. Like it gets that silly, definitely. This is
the fee total that you're looking at. What's that number on the right?
6 million.
Wow.
Almost 7 million. So it's several multiples of an all-time high at this point. This was like 4 or 5. And then if you look at native units, so that's ETH, it is, what is this? 17K ETH. That's just in fees yesterday.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me. I mean, I know I had transactions go through where it was like a 0.2 ETH fee for the one transaction.
So there's definitely a point where people stop transacting, obviously, like you were talking about with Uniswap. But as long as these DEXs are just ETH and there's no alternative, fees just keep getting higher and you can't do anything else. You know, you can't use this bill, the LTC spillway, for example.
Yeah, you're making me want to get long tokens that are offering something similar on a different chain. God, I hate to say, there's one for freaking TRX that's coming out. that makes me sick.
And there's definitely been a lot of talk about Gren, I think, is one of them as well. And I don't know, all these other ones.
Yeah, I've been looking at Gren just from a chart perspective because it's got huge inflation, but
Ren.
Oh, Ren, R-E-N. Yeah. And that one's already done really well, and it was one of those Coinbase ads and all that. The other thing we're seeing all this transition to is the Ethereum price, which, it went right into my congestion zone on a USD basis, which I built that off of the highs between June and November 2017 that it eventually broke out of and went to all-time highs. But then that was support in March 2018. It was where we broke down from in August 2018. It was the high in July 2019. And now we've gone into it, and then within 2 weeks, we've broken above it. I've got this like very narrow point around 450, which was the exact breakdown point from the consolidation back in 2018 that we're up against now. But I don't honestly view that as a huge resistance. Like, this seems like it could just really go. And when you compare it to all the things that we just talked about, it seems like Ethereum is on a very bullish path here. Probably as bullish as it was during the height of the ICO hype. The only difference I would say is that some of the need to hold Ethereum might be a little different. Like, you need it for interfacing with these DEXs, but you don't necessarily need it to like be a yield farmer. You could hold DAI or something, right?
Yes and no, but at the end of the day, it's the exact same thing as ICO.
Still bullish because Ethereum needs to be transacted.
So the lockups aren't as long in that it's not a true lockup like they were for ICO treasuries, where there's at least some time lag between like the ICO finishing and the company selling the ETH, because what a lot of companies did during the ICO craze was hold the ETH the entire time and not properly manage their treasury. So they were just long ETH, right? So that's not necessarily the case here, in that if you're in some of these smart contracts with your ETH, you can just quickly get out of the contract, you know?
What was that one? What, Sub or something like that? They started trading their treasury when ETH got down to like 100, and then it capitulated down to $80, and that was when they sold it all or got liquidated or something from the rest of their ICO funds. But yeah, once everybody realized that at the all-time high, that was the constant sell pressure for the next
2 years.
yeah, 2 years, I guess, but definitely January 2018 down to the bottom in December 2018. So a full year of sell pressure was almost entirely from those ICO treasuries.
100%.
And now, it's still, but now we're breaking up from that range, and so many of those ICOs, maybe that they're back to life, like they lived on a thread, now they're calling themselves a DeFi coin, but they don't have the same strain of like needing to liquidate their Ethereum at the moment.
Right. So either they've wisened up and realized we're going to hold something other than ETH because it's way too volatile for long-term health of the company, of our runway, or they're going to say we're going to leverage trade this and lose it all, right? Like that's
yeah.
So to me, that's where it's headed. But let me just reiterate that point real quick with the ETH treasuries.
Wow,
it's down.
This is the withdrawals from ICOs.
Yeah, and this slow drip was definitely
so brutal.
A huge part of what happened with ETH. But
is that number of Ethereum?
Yeah, that's number sold per month.
Good
in the red.
Gracious. So it January 2018, 232,000 Ethereum. And it was basically a downward trend all the way to 28,000, 20,000 Ethereum, last month?
Yeah, and this big one was the Digix DAO. They redistributed their ETH to the holders of the token. That's why it's so big, because their treasury was still at like 400K ETH or something. But it's down to 1 million now total. Which is up down from like 4 or 5 million. This is just the ICOs that I can track. But so there's that. And then you have this where it's like, okay, we sold down 3 million ETH and we put it all back into ICOs, right? This was even, I should check the latest.
Well, in some ways that Ethereum is going out of ICOs into smaller wallets and then locking into DeFi or preparing for ETH 2.0 staking or whatever else.
Yeah. So the Gini coefficient, if that's even the proper term, or the distribution coefficient, it's always better when you're not enriching a single party, like ICO treasuries. You're not creating whales, because then it's a little less dramatic when sell, right?
If they go sell everything, they're not selling 100,000 Ethereum. It's 100 people selling 1,000.
Right. At usually different times, it
spreads it out.
Yeah. So it's up to four or five. Yeah. So we've exceeded kind of the 2018 ICO treasury holdings. So to me, it's just like, okay, supply's just moving from one place to the other. Of course, price is going up. We're just sucking up all that excess Ethereum, right?
Like, yeah.
So there's that. What were we talking about with price? So
that's still extraordinarily bullish then.
You
have this from a target perspective. I was saying, in my view over here, like I've got this thing on 450. It's actually 456. It's just a precise point we broke down from. But in reality, we're now back into the range that we that it distributed from in 2018 before it, truly went, bull hopes were given up. But there's really not a big difference breaking above 450, which we're very close to right now, and say like 700. So what I want to know from you is, what are you looking at in terms of trying to say, okay, here's where I want to take profits. This is when it's too much, too fast, whatever.
Well, we talked about this edge to edge for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
And the big thing in my mind before it happened was, how are we actually going to get there? Like, what's going to actually.
And for new listeners, edge to edge trades, this is just a concept based on trend following. These clouds are automatically derived. The size of the cloud is wider when there was a larger price range in the past. And essentially, it's showing the fact that there's a large price gap that it can now travel through, because the difference between 220 and 420 is not that big based on the range of movement in the past. And once it gets into that cloud that Josh is showing on here, then the move from the bottom to the top of the cloud can be pretty rapid. Did I do that okay?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so it creates this dynamic support resistance, and the cloud is thick when there's a big range previously. Yeah. Quickly. So, ETH dropped from all-time highs to 75 in less than a year, and then this cloud gets created. So, yeah, the question was like, how are we going to actually go from 200 to 700? But I think it's become clear it's the DeFi lockup supply stuff that we keep talking about.
On this weekly chart, you like this 450 on the low side, I guess, 460, whatever that is.
Right. So 450 sounded crazy at 200, right? But right.
But now
here we are.
Now we're there. I mean, we're basically there. We're $9 away from 450.
So it's either 450 or 750, which is a massive range, I know, but those are the targets, you know?
Like, I think we could hit, I think we could legitimately hit 600 or 700 and then kind of roll back down from that and consolidate above 450. Like, that to me would make sense in terms of a blow off on DeFi mania, Ethereum network stuff, all that. Like, I can't look at these fees, I can't look at this stuff and think it's going to discourage people so much that they're just going to sell all their Ethereum. So what I think you're doing is you're just continuing to establish buy pressure until it blows the top off.
Yeah, and this was a really great example. Somebody was showing me on Silver, edge to edge. What I like to see for the edge to edge trades is this exactly, because if you have your orders ready to go at the other edge of the cloud, you're set, because you get out of your position at 750 or 29 in this case for Silver, and then it just does whatever it's going to do, but you're out of that trade at that point. So I'm not bullish past 750. That doesn't mean it can't wick to 1400 that week, but past 750 for ETH,
the very idea of 750 makes my head hurt though, like which is why I shouldn't be surprised. You talk about Silver, I mean, dude, I think I was as bullish Silver as anybody, you know, and I missed like $10 of it. You know, like, I played it to $20 and it went to 30, which is a 50% move on spot Silver. So can Ethereum go beyond the targets I'm looking at? Yeah, absolutely. This is Ethereum. This isn't a precious metal. Like, this isn't the legacy market stuff. Like, this can do so much insane stuff. And I don't always use the cloud, but one of the things I love about the doubled cloud, which I've loved ever since I learned it from you and back in 2017, is I really do like the targets that it can provide for you sometimes on those long time frame doubled clouds. I think they help you see what's possible based on the prior price ranges better than some other tools.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of the big things why I started using it.
Whereas I love using moving averages, but they're more trend following, you know, like if you're following the 20 week or you're using it as resistance or breaking above the 200 week. That was the big thing for Ethereum to me, that was like, okay, we just went above the 200 week USD moving average. That's like, okay, this is going to be a true breakout, real bull market, and let me get in at whatever it was, 240 instead of the new weekly highs above 275, 306, stuff like that. I was in at 240 because I was like, this is the break of the 200 week moving average. This is the move. Like, we're entering a different paradigm here. So count me in. On the other end of this, you've got some potential retrace zones, I guess, when you look at the lower time frames, huh?
Sure. But
or is this single cloud?
So this is single cloud on the weekly. And it's, so if you're looking, you know, to me, it's all the same stuff. Like, single cloud on the weekly is the same as the double cloud edge to edge, because the single cloud weekly is telling you Kumo breakout, you should be long. And if I'm watching the doubled, you know, edge to edge, TK cross, whatever, like, it's the same. It's all the same stuff to me. But talking about volume real quick for ETH. So this is the BLX or ELX rather, the
Ethereum Liquid Index.
Liquid index for BNC, and I was looking at this volume the other day, and we're not even close to like where we were peak volume and at this price previously, right? Like,
yeah, it look at hardly this. Looks like we've even broken out.
We haven't done anything.
We're doing all of this so far without real retail participation. Like, yeah, sure, we got Dave Portney, you know, hanging out with the Winklevoss twins, and he bought some Bitcoin. Is he going to bring his crowd? I don't know. Like, we don't know. It was a fun thing that happened, and you know, he's got his Robin Hood warriors or whatever, but that's not real retail. We're not seeing, like, your parents aren't calling you yet. Probably the type of FOMO that we saw in 2017. It hasn't hit yet, and we're seeing that presented in the volume.
Yeah, and this the other thing about this volume specifically is that it's real exchange volume, not like fake volume. So it's
not derivatives. Right. Yeah, this is combined. So this liquid index does combined spot exchange volume. So this is, it's probably like long term buyers, spot buyers, or new money coming in. So that also highlights to you that we're not done. Highlights to me that 750 is probably a midterm target. But if Ethereum, if it really prevents anything else from being competitive in the, you know, contractual money landscape or whatever you want to call it, then Ethereum could make an all-time high, in my opinion.
Yeah, and this is not Tether money either. So this is just like Coinbase, Kraken, Bitstamp, Gemini, U.S. exchanges. But
right. Hey, we're also seeing a lot of interest in mid-caps and stuff. We got a question about one specifically, so we can use it as our example because you and I talk about it a lot anyway. But how are you looking at, you know, Bitcoin is not moving as fast, but it's bullish. Ethereum is moving really fast. It's very bullish. How are you looking at saying, okay, well, here's a trade opportunity and something, you know, down the line on something that's more of a mid cap? I've got ZRX pulled up right now. We were asked about it. Plus I was looking at this one myself. And what I see on this is, you know, what happens is with the mid caps, the small caps, you start charting them relative to Bitcoin or relative to Ethereum rather than relative to the dollar. And what it ends up doing oftentimes is kind of mirroring the earlier stages in terms of like where Ethereum broke out of its range or something like that. And I look at some of these mid caps and they look extraordinarily bullish on daily and weekly timeframes, like they're about to gain additional momentum relative to Bitcoin. Are you seeing similar looks, or do you think the alt market's going to chill, or what is your thoughts on that?
I haven't really looked at the too many BTC pairs. I was talking about ETH-BTC with somebody earlier today, and just like this ETH-USD chart, ETH-BTC looks like it wants 05.
I mean ETH-BTC,
if we
it just keeps breaking above everything that I point to. Like,
so that's 05. There's a yearly pivot at 05. 07 is like the 750 ETH target. But it's going higher, like eventually. It's not going to just stop here.
Yeah, and similar on the range trade, like Ethereum, obviously done really well. It's into resistance right now, but if it does break up, like you said, 0.05 is well within the bounds of what it could do, in my mind. And Ethereum has moved faster than some of the other coins. Now, some of these DeFi coins have moved really, really, really fast, so they're not necessarily as bullish. But like when I look at something, you know, an older, more established coin, whatever, that has more history, like ZRX, I've seen a lot of coins like this where, in my mind at least, they're kind of the rotation coins where you might go from some of these fast mover DeFi types. So like if you're taking profits on Link and Ren and some of those, you might roll them into some of these smaller caps that are a little behind. And that's usually how the cycle goes. Once those move, then you go to the smallest caps, et cetera.
Yeah, for Link BTC, I would love to see a massive head and shoulders form. I don't think it's going to happen, but if it does, watch out.
Yeah, I mean, you can still like Link, but also think that it's going to be difficult to outperform BTC at that level. I mean, when we were talking about this before, the Link Marines they chirp in my mentions about how I said this, but let's see, I have the daily up here, but I had pointed initially to this weekly, and then I had to continue drawing it. But I initially drew this ascending triangle back here at whatever that is, 37, 38K Satoshis. And I was like, this is one of the most bullish weekly charts I've ever seen. It's gone up a lot, though, since then, like 300% relative to Bitcoin. And for me, that's where I'm like, all right, this has been a fun ride. You know, it went from $1.50 to $18 against the dollar. So I'm saying, where can I rotate these profits to continue trying to win somewhere else? Even though this has been a great trade, I may still have my fundamental thoughts on it. I'm just looking for some potential mean reversion.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I don't think Link's a buy up here. Even if it goes to 150, it's still not the right play in my mind as far as what I want to be doing. It went up too fast, right?
Yeah.
So you're missing out if you rotate out of it, but common sense says you should be dollar cost averaging out of this position if you're in from the lows, right?
Yep. And even some of the others, like Somebody just asked us about Atom. This is one that I've been charting. I talked about it on the show before. It reached my target and then some. I mean, it still looks, it looks really overextended on the daily, even if it looks perfectly healthy on the weekly. But it could have a 30% drawdown and still look healthy, you know? So, like, it could, some of these could retrace a lot, still be in bull markets. So it's kind of a buy the dip type of scenario, even if they still look healthy. So it all depends on your parameters that you're willing to play by.
Atom just had its second ever 5,200 bull cross.
Oh, yeah.
But the chart looks like a hot mess. I would just buy this when it's low, sell it when it's high.
Yeah.
I'm actually holding this from December somewhere. Somewhere in December I bought. I'm still holding it.
I mean, for an example, I can hate the coin. I hate it. I've just ranted about it last week about XRP. But if I look at XRP relative to Bitcoin, it's sitting right at resistance that it looks like it could just want to blast through, because these markets are very correlated. And XRP has been lagging like crazy, but that doesn't stop it from a potential 80% relative to Bitcoin gain and go from 2,500 Satoshis to 4,500 Satoshis, which would kind of put it back towards a prior level that it had. And that's the kind of rotation where if your goal is to gain Bitcoin exposure in all this, your point of trading most of these altcoins is to find what's going to give me my best chance of success doing so. So I would look to say what's lagging but still has some kind of narrative. And that's not me calling Ripple bullish. It's just saying there is, you know, some Rippler is still going to have their narrative. So it might be worth a trade, but it's certainly not worth an investment.
Yeah, I don't think there's any harm in holding like 10 alts for the next 2 months as stuff rotates around, and then you just sell whatever comfortable profit you want to. Someone was asking us about Tezos. Tezos BTC just looks like this massive range.
Massive range, but also maybe huge breakout.
I wouldn't call it like coffee and distribution, but if you map it out, it's probably close. It had this automatic sell, retest of highs, some sort of upper test of whatever, I don't know the terms, but
it had an all-time high breakout on the dollar pair though that made me interested. Like, I was watching it at 320 ish wanting in, and I didn't get in because I was in other stuff doing other things. Now it's a dollar over that. It's already at 410, but when I look at the dollar side of things, I think it could go to $5 or $6 for the dollar move. I don't know what that presents on the BTC side, like you just said, though.
Yeah, so I'm still holding Tezos. Since December, I've been in and out of it a couple times. But so that's the XTC BTC. Like the two, it's above the 200. It's above the previous all-time high. It's in the pitchfork. It looks fine for continued move up. For the USD pair, I was watching this whatever cup and handle thing, and it basically hit the target zone. Mm. So it may need to like reconsolidate, which it looks like it's trying to do.
That's kind of what I felt like the 320 trade I wanted to take. I'm just not willing to take that trade at $4. Like, to me, the easy trade was, you know, whatever, some kind of 30% move off of the initial break to all time high. So 320 to $4, 320 to 420, the 420 to five, 420 to six, it's harder for me to take. I'm in a world where the market is bullish, so I'm willing to buy something when it's pressing against resistance. But then if you buy the like daily close, it could have already moved 20% or something. So if you're not kind of prepared in that spot, it could be really tough.
So XTZ is up 300% from March as well.
Yeah, but 300%, that's not 900%.
Right. I was just going to say, even though it looks like it hasn't moved relative to the entire market, it's still up 300% since March. But yeah, I think this easily goes higher, which is why I'm holding it. But
some other laggers that I like, I still like XMR, although I had to get out of it because I just saw too many opportunities elsewhere. But it's the type where it's just consolidated for so long. I think it'll have a big move. I don't know when. I don't even know if I'll time it properly now. But I still think that's another one that it's going to have its moment. Like, the market is bullish. People will find stuff that they find interesting. They'll rotate into, and they'll have an opportunity to go. Eventually, though, we're gonna get a smackdown from Bitcoin. Do you have a dominance chart that you could pull up?
Yeah.
Whether Bitcoin, you know, goes down and shakes everybody out and retests something like 10.2, which is totally possible if you're looking at a weekly time frame, or it breaks up and goes and taps 14K. I think that's basically the two directions. You know, the size of the move that we have to come after Bitcoin finishes consolidating is going to be a big weekly move down to 10.2, which you got to be a big buyer on that, or a move up into 13.5, 14K, which is where I would be looking to be a profit taker on a margin position. And go ahead.
So I like 13 to 14 in the near term. 10.2, I'd have to check what the weekly cloud looks like.
Yeah, I don't know about the cloud. It's just where a weekly high, previous high was, which is the dip that I would want to buy. Either way, that's going to have an effect on this Bitcoin dominance chart and whether or not alt season, whatever, continues. Because right now, alts are in control as Bitcoin dominance is down to 60% off of highs, a little above 70%. But there's this huge divergence on that dominance chart as well, which is one of those things that could kind of give you a signal. I think the Bitcoin relative pairs, whether Bitcoin goes up or down, I think the Bitcoin relative pairs are going to take a hit sooner than later.
Yeah, but as much as common sense tells me this needs to chill, we're in ETH Ponzi season, right?
Yeah, so. I mean it could be another week or two. It could go down to 55% on the dominance. I don't know. Like that's not particularly helpful. I'm just saying, like, the longer it extends, the more careful you need to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. But if you're following the 200 EMA principle, 200 EMA. Like, again, this is exactly like ICO madness. We're just crushing this dominance because people are just creating tokens out of thin air.
Yeah, when you create new, if you create a new token, like Curve the other day, like the fully distributed market cap would be like hundreds of billions of dollars for Curve, something stupid, or like tens of billions. Who cares? Very, very big. It'd be like number two on market cap. Except for there's like 2,000 Curve in existence right now. So it's like the price of a Curve. It's like when Zeek was 3 Bitcoin per Zeek when it first came out. And that plays a huge role in the overall market cap and makes dominance look even worse than it is.
Yes, because market cap is silly. It's like if we created a coin, sold one of them for a dollar, but there were 2 million of them. All of a sudden the market cap is 2 million, right?
Right. And these end up becoming zombie coins, which we've talked about before, which is basically you have a bunch of coins that are unsellable because they're totally illiquid. So they could even count towards the market cap, but not actually be there. Like, it would be nice if there was a dominance that was relatable to the liquid market cap rather than the total market cap. That would be cool. That'd be a cool product. Somebody want to come out with that.
Yeah. I know I've talked about it with lots of people. It's hard to do. As far as like curating individually. The other thing I'd like to see is an ERC-20 dominance index, which has to exist somewhere. I mean, we're starting to see DeFi indices get created. CoinGecko is actually...
It's been good because they aren't fleecing people trying to get on there.
Is that, like this DeFi list is like a Bible if you're actually trading this stuff, because I had no idea what a lot of this stuff was.
Right.
But... CoinGecko is on the ball as far as listing.
Yeah, I mean, and CoinGecko is monetizing through ads and affiliate links and stuff like that, which is, I mean, CoinMarketCap does too, but some of these others, they're either really slow or they fleece people getting listings on there. So with CoinGecko, a project can essentially get on there within like a couple days as long as they fill out the appropriate information. So you can get a pretty decent representation of what's going on, even though the CoinGecko website and mobile app are freaking terrible. I can't even log in on the mobile app because it won't, like, it's broken. But the information's good.
One thing I was looking at this yesterday, I wanted to sort by age of coin age or whatever to see, like, what are the new ones, you know, that have just been listed over the past 6 months, something like that. Versus Link.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird.
What's the Link dominance relative to everything else?
weird to me that we've had all this other DeFi stuff previously, and now there's this new Ponzi stuff that's also been labeled DeFi. I feel like it needs a new name at this point. Because even Maker, like, early on it was risky. It's still risky. The CDP stuff, I just did an article on it.
I mean, Maker looks about as conservative as it gets.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, this is this survived a couple of years at this point.
Yeah. I mean, some of these are crazy, dude. Like, Chainlink up above 6 billion market cap, 16 billion fully diluted. Synthetics, 750, 1.2 fully diluted. Like, that's huge. But there's still a lot of growth potential in these overall. But we're seeing a lot of money funnel into this sector. But yeah, that's a good tip with CoinGecko. You know, there's news that we have not even gotten to, which is the KYC side of things. And this plays into Uniswap too, like we talked about, and other DEXs. There's tons of DEX projects right now. There's DEX derivatives coming out. And we're seeing a KYC mandate from Bittrex, or not Bittrex, they did that a while back, from, what's it called? Oh my God, BitMEX.
BitMEX.
I'm losing my mind. I have not slept enough in this market. So BitMEX came out with an announcement saying essentially that everybody's going to have to do KYC sometime like 9 months from now, like in January or February. So if you want to trade at all, you'll have to do KYC on BitMEX. And what it seems like is actually that doesn't matter where you trade. It seems like this is more they're setting a precedent, but it's a broader policy from United States regulators that they're essentially requiring that for any exchange that wants to be in their good graces. This is Frankie Scoops over there at the Block that reported on this. Did not dump the price because there are good alternatives is basically the only reason I could think so, because this would have been about as bearish as it gets in 2018. But it's been pretty well expected recently, right?
Yeah, and when I saw that, my first thought was that these DEXs are just going to get even more popular because for the most part, none of them require KYC.
And people are going to do everything they can to prevent KYC, whether it's a political, philosophical reason or a practical one, and they just don't want to avoid taxes. It doesn't matter. People have proven over and over again that they do not want a KYC, and it's going to continue BitMEX's downward spiral from an overall volume perspective, which I don't feel bad at all. I'd love to see that distributed between more exchanges.
Yeah, all of the... Well, once we see DEXs that have derivatives, it's kind of game over for places like Deribit and other people.
It depends on how well they execute and what percentage of stuff is on-chain versus off-chain. I think it's probably one of the ways where either a side chain to Ethereum or a completely different but like way faster quasi-centralized chain might actually work. Because if you can get, say, sub 1 second confirmations and stuff like that, you might actually be able to make markets and offer high frequency trading and make a decent experience with a DEX.
Yeah, which go ahead.
Which is also another project that launched. We got so much crap to talk about today. The Serum thing that FTX is doing is basically their attempt to solve that. Did you look into it?
I did not. I know it exists, but that's about it. I'm not like mega bullish on DEXs long term. It's just right now when DEXs are popping off and people just want to FOMO into any new coin that was just created yesterday. They're not going to be able to do that on BitMEX or Deribit, right? Or Binance even. Like Binance, we thought Binance was swift and nimble back in the day, but this is a whole new level of being insta-listed without costing the project anything like you were mentioning earlier.
Right. And all that depends on what degree of controls had. But so for instance, Solana, which is the underlying protocol, which is also mooning right now, from Serum, it can handle 50,000 transactions per second. Ethereum can handle 15. So there's obviously ways to design a chain to handle this kind of stuff way better, or a side chain to Ethereum, whatever. But even then, it's not like one of these is going to just be able to solve everything. Like even 50,000 transactions per second, it's not the same as a highly scalable, you know, web interface. It's just not the same, but it can be way better than it currently is.
Yeah, it's all about trade-offs. Vitalik talked about this a long time ago, but the scalability trilemma between security, scalability, and decentralization. Typically, when you see these high throughput values like EOS or pretty much any other proof-of-stake network, the issue is the centralization. I mean, I just did an article on NEO the other day. 5 of the 7 total validators for the network are still controlled by NEO.
Yeah, so they didn't exactly decentralize themselves like they promised 3 years ago.
Exactly. So there's always issues. Like, there's always trade-offs. ETH is arguably highly decentralized, even though most of the nodes are on Infura. We don't actually know how many full nodes even exist. It's all cloud hosting stuff. Like, ETH has tons of issues, but it's going to have less issues than a lot of these other proof-of-stake networks that already exist. And Solana, like, you have to think about it. You have to create a network effect strong enough for individuals to say, all right, I want to become a validator and get involved here. And it has to be cheap enough for the infrastructure to actually run a node. So ETH is probably one of the few networks that has that network effect, whereas all these other places, it's tough. Even EOS, it's like, I don't know. You know, it's expensive to run these validators for a lot of these chains.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, they have to be rewarded to do so.
Right, there has to be an incentive, typically.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't stopped Solana from doing extraordinarily well, and then FTX had a public sale for the Serum side of it, which did incredibly well.
Isn't Solana the Bram Cohen chain?
I don't know what that means. Is that the person?
Yeah, Bram Cohen is the creator of BitTorrent.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure he created Solana or was part of the founding team or whatever.
Let's find out. It's 15 times its USD value when it ICO'd. So.
Okay, he created Chia Network.
Yeah, I'd have to look to see who's in this, but
I thought he was involved in Solana, but maybe not. I don't know. There's so many different names. I just need like a spreadsheet of like everything, you know?
Yeah. Well, Solana raised $25 million and they're up 9x relative to BTC, 5x relative to Ethereum, 15x relative to USD. So that's been a good one to the people that were involved in it. And they couldn't have arrived at a better time in terms of offering a solution that might be better than, well, it has to be better than Uniswap, at least from a performance standpoint. The question is, how well will it transition from a network effects perspective? Because that's where Ethereum completely dominates.
Okay, so Solana did an ICO on March 26th this year. They raised $1.76 million.
That's all you got? $1.76? I had $25 million on. It must be the token.
I'm looking at Crunchbase. So
that's the company behind Solana. So the company, right. The equity raise was only $1.6 million?
Yeah, 1.76.
Yeah, 1.76 for the company, and then the coin, they sold $25 million worth.
The Series A they did was $20 million with Multicoin Capital as lead investor.
Yeah, I saw that too.
It's another VC dumping ground.
Yeah, definitely. Congrats, Multicoin.
Yeah.
So by the way, how are these ICOs even legally occurring right now? I don't really understand that either. I thought that game was over.
They're not.
They figured out a new way.
It's the same dog, new tricks or whatever.
Yeah. Old,
same tricks, new dog. I don't know, whatever you want to call it.
Well, that one's been doing, pretty well on the token side and the equity side, I'm certain. I'd like to see if one of those can you know, actually perform, get some network effects and stuff like that, because certainly we've seen the demand for it based on the experience with Uniswap. It's hard to imagine Serum or whatever won't support ERC-20 and Ethereum, though. Like, it'll have to be part of it, even if some Sol token or whatever is more important, or SRM token. You can never have too many tokens that these folks can pitch into the game.
I mean, the dream at the end of the day is to have one wallet that has the name of a token. It doesn't care which network it's on, and you just send it where you need to send it. And it's all done in the background. the fact that we have to pay attention to, is this an ERC-20?
Yeah, it should just all be in an easy mobile app, as simple as Robinhood, whatever.
Yeah, I think that'll go away eventually. It'll send on whichever chain that needs to be sent. It'll be done through atomic swaps, whatever.
And AJ in the chat brought up, which is a good point, really Serum, Solana, I would say it's kind of an iteration on top of what the Binance DEX is already doing. Binance DEX is way faster than Ethereum, but apparently Serum is supposed to be better than that. But Binance has had their DEX running, and they're kind of in this game as well. I don't know if it's near as successful as any, you know, like, so if that, I don't know if that's a template or not.
Well, it's not a DEX. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It goes back to the decentralization. Like, it's not actually a DEX.
You're still kind of interfacing with their pools, right?
Excuse me. Yeah. It's on the Binance chain, right? And who controls the Binance chain? Binance. So,
yeah.
It's an exchange. It's not decentralized, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's all complicated. Eventually, though, some of these, this is a theme that we've gone on since 2017 when we first heard about ZRX. But it seems like there's at least more iteration, enough iteration coming on a lot of these to where it's a better time than ever in terms of the DEXs having a chance. You bring in all this KYC for derivatives exchanges and everywhere else, like that's not going to hurt in terms of these being popular. And then we'll continue around the merry-go-round of regulatory rabbit chasing and see what's next.
Exactly what I was going to say. Just evolution, avoiding the lawman. Just like Curve Finance thing. They were like, well, somebody launched it on the network, so I guess we have to use what they did. Like, no, that's not what happened. They were just trying to avoid a lawsuit down the line and say that, oh, it wasn't us. It was some anonymous person, you know?
Yeah.
There's no way that they...
There's no way that was the case.
Just like had the keys just lying out there on a park bench and somebody picked them up, right?
Yeah. There was somebody that did a really good thread about that. I'll try to put it in the show notes, but they put it well in terms of what probably happened, but it looked like Curve was very obviously trying to get around some kind of regulatory justification of stuff they're dealing with.
And I don't think that's the wrong move. I just,
bold.
It's bold.
It's a bold move.
It's pretty obvious what they're doing, you know?
Like, do you really sit in on a deposition and be like, oh, no, we had no idea what was going on? I mean, that was mind-blowing to us. We just happened to leave our all our keys to launch on our public GitHub, and then, bam, somebody deployed it all just right. Can't believe that happened.
Yeah, the odds, man.
We're not in control. It's not us.
When I first read that tweet, I assumed it was just an inside thing that they did. I didn't actually take it a step further and think it was like for legal reasons. But once somebody brought that up, it's like, yeah, that's obvious. Like that's exactly what they should have done. It was just then launch it anonymously.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's trying to, it's kind of like, I don't like Uber, but it's kind of the Uber concept, right? They're just stretching the regulatory rope as far as they can and making them get in trouble and then trying to be so disruptive that they get away with it anyway.
Yeah. It's just more regarb.
Regulatory arbitrage.
Which is fine. People hate laws. They shouldn't exist. I'm libertarian. People should be allowed to invest in Ponzi's, whatever, you know. That's fine. But don't be surprised when the lawman cometh.
I know there's other news, Josh. I know there's other stuff going on, but I feel like we've talked about enough. I think I've covered everything that I care about from a news perspective. Did you have anything news related that you wanted to finish with? And if
I don't even know, man. It's just like every day something new is happening.
All right, then let's finish with this. 1 week from today when we talk, are we at, let's see.
I think we keep going. I think the Ponzi, good times keep rolling.
Good times keep rolling. 12.5?
Link probably hits 36.
36, that's beyond what my expectations were. Well, sir, I kindly ask for $500 Ethereum and $13,000 Bitcoin. That's what I want. Give me that.
Yeah, I think 13 to 14 on BTC is realistic. I think 450 to 750 is realistic. I know it's a massive range, but like, who knows, right? Like, this is like early ICO territory we're in right now.
Yeah, we're going to get a big old nasty wick down. It could easily happen this week. We don't know. I don't want to extend the show longer than we have to. I definitely have noticed though that the largest Ethereum open interest on Deribit was at $400. On Bitcoin, it's a little more spread out, but technically the highest is right around 12K.
Somebody was mentioning this earlier, talking about CME weekends, and we're finally seeing price go up on the weekend more often with the CME being closed. So that's something to watch for as well. Like, if that'll start to influence everyone's decisions as far as trading decisions. If we have this weekend party where CME is closed, we pump, then Sunday we dump back to open, dump back to the previous close to like fill the gap or whatever.
What you're saying is we're about to start Bloody Monday season again.
That's new money Monday, right?
New money Monday, Bloody Sunday instead. Yeah. So on Ethereum, what I found interesting, 400, huge open interest. However, the actual expiry open interest rates, August 14th was pretty big, but then August 21st is not that big, and then August 28th and September 25th are really big. So I think that our correction will probably come before August 28th, because whoever has this 405 ETH open interest, I think we're going to tap back down to that for that August 28th expiry. That's my galaxy brain. Go tap 500 and then go down to 400, or go tap 600 and go down to 450, you know, something like that. I feel like I think these options markets are more important than a lot of people are giving credit to. And Bitcoin's the same. Like, the open interest on August 21st is 8,000 Bitcoin, but the August 28th open interest is 52,000 Bitcoin. So five times the open interest on August 28th for Bitcoin, with the highest strikes at 11 and 12K. So I think by the 28th, we'll probably be back to where we are right now, but I think we could pump up in the meantime.
Yeah, and then if you want to just pop my screen up for a second, I refreshed the CME dates for the CME futures. And August 28th should be a big volatility area.
That's August 28th is the crossover there too?
The next rollover, yeah.
Yeah, so I say we top like sometime the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, and we probably dump into that 28th.
Possible.
That's how I'm playing it.
All right, man.
That's how I'm going to play it. That's what I'm going to do.
Sounds good.
All right.
See you at 750 ETH.
Yeah. Oh. I can only get so excited, Josh.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
All right. Good seeing everybody. Thanks for joining us. Go to Carpe Noctem on YouTube. Check out Josh's videos. They're always good. Go to ledgerstatus.com to subscribe to this podcast. Rate us on Apple Podcasts and all those places you do that stuff. We'll talk to you next time. I feel the breeze wound.